You are listening to the Mid-Current Church Podcast. This week's message is week 3 and the final week of our teaching series titled, Love is in the Air. For more information and to visit us online, visit us at midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
Good morning once again to all of you, and thanks to PJ for the introduction. My name is Sten Carlson, which if you didn't know is an incredibly Swedish name. I wanted all my kids to have Swedish names. My daughter Lucy comes from the Swedish name Lucia, maybe you know like Santa Lucia around Christmas time, Swedish roots. My boys especially, Oli and Siggy, I wanted to have unique Swedish, Scandinavian names just like I did. I'm a pretty proud, I think most are at times, I'm a pretty proud Swedish and Scandinavian dude. There are some characteristics, however, of, you know, some stereotypical characteristics of reserved Scandinavian men that I hope not to emulate. In fact, I wonder how many of you have heard the story about the Scandinavian man who had been married to his wife for 50 years. They had an anniversary party, and someone in the group, they asked, they said, hey, what is the secret to a long and happy marriage? And he looked at his wife, and he smiled, and he said, it's easy. He said, I have loved her deeply for all 50 years. And everybody, they oohed and they awed and they all said, oh, that's so beautiful. And he said, yeah. He said, I loved her so much. And one time, I almost told her. Right? The nervous laughter, maybe a little bit. I'm not surprised by it. In my estimation, I think it's the sound of every wife in here going, is my husband Scandinavian? I didn't think he was, but maybe he is. Maybe he is, maybe he's not. Either way, if I had to guess, I would say every single married couple in the room is familiar with some of the joys and some of the sorrows of love and of marriage. And that is why we have carved out, if you're new here today, wondering what is this all about, that's why we've carved out 3 weeks to talk about marriage and to God's, talk about God's intention for it. And so today is ultimately, as PJ mentioned, it's the third and it is the final week in a series that we have just titled, Love is in the Air. I've wanted to talk about this again, in case you're new here today. I wanted to talk about marriage for these 3 weeks. In part because of, honestly, some of my just pastor's instinct that said, you know what, I think that marriage in the world or even marriage, you know, marriages in our church is just something that, man, maybe we need to spend some time and give some attention to talking about these things. And so that's why we created this short series here. And I also, as I've done every week so far, I want to reiterate just a couple things. I recognize that not everyone here, that not everyone in the church is married. And if that's you, I want you to hear me say one final time, marriage is not the goal. It's not some sign of social success, right? It is just one pathway to becoming more of who God designed you to be, which is what we spent a lot of time talking last week all about. I would also say that if you're not married, you might be someday, in which case I think that the conversation that we've been having, it could just be a helpful way for you to build a foundation. Even if you are not married and you're going, you know what, Sten, I don't really ever plan to be married, I would still say, because I have people like this in my life, I would still say that it's very likely that you have people in your life who are married. And they, you know, at some point they may be looking for godly encouragement and godly support from people in their life. And that person someday, it could be you. And so regardless of your relationship status, I'm glad you're here. I think the conversation that we've been had can be helpful for every single one of us as we yet again take a look today at marriage and God's intention for this thing that we call marriage. As I have done for every week up to this point, I want to pose at the beginning here, I want to pose a question for you. And the question that I want to pose to you today is this: what is the greatest threat to marriage? Like, what's the greatest threat? What's the one thing that we got to be like on the lookout for? I mean, what's the one thing that really, could break apart and bust up these marriages of ours? What's the greatest threat to marriage? I'm sure a lot of things come to mind for you. There are a lot of applicable answers. So many things that trip us up in marriage today. Statistics, if I just really quickly here, statistics on divorce provide some interesting possibilities as threats to marriage. Let me quickly say a word about divorce before I look at some statistics in case that's a part of anyone's story here today. I want to make sure you hear me say loud and clear: divorce is not the unpardonable sin. It's not. I think we could all agree that when it does happen, it is painful and it is tragic. And so I only reference these statistics here to offer a glimpse of some of the challenges that often play a part. And so there was a 2025 national study that I saw that ranked lack of commitment, infidelity, conflict, and financial issues as the leading causes of divorce. Quickly on some of these here, it was interesting when it comes to financial issues. The same study said that 41% of Gen X divorces and 29% of Boomer divorces are over financial issues. Sometimes, despite the fact that there's some specificity listed here, sometimes the cause that's given is a lot less specific. Another statistic I read somewhere that said almost 50% of divorces are a result of what is cited as basic incompatibility. That's what it said. Almost 50% cited as just basic incompatibility, meaning there wasn't necessarily like a thing or an event or an instance that led to the divorce, right? The couple had just kind of boiled it down to basic incompatibility. Maybe some of these things describe some of the challenges that you have experienced in your marriage. Maybe they'd be some of these things. Maybe they'd be on your list of the greatest threats to marriage. Or maybe it would be, maybe you'd expand. Maybe you'd say it's disrespect or dishonesty or lack of trust or something completely different. But if I had to boil it down, right? So many boiled it down to basic incompatibility. If I had to boil it down, if I had to put every potential threat to a God-honoring marriage, if I had to lump it into one category, if I had to just choose one word that I think describes what every marriage challenge has in common, here's what I would say. Stick with me. Here's what I would say. It's daylight. Okay, that's an admittedly unique answer to the question, and I'm not trying to be overly cute or extra creative or extra original. I am simply thinking of the phrase that is often used to encourage tight relational bonds between two people. That phrase is this: don't let any daylight come between you. Don't let any daylight come between you. Now, I'll acknowledge here at the beginning, that's not a Bible verse. But listen to what God's word does say about the type of bond that he intended for this thing that we call marriage. We find it in the book of Genesis. So this is, back at the beginning, God said it wasn't good for man to be alone. And so he created woman. And Adam said, finally, she's bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. And here's how God responded to it. Genesis 2, verse 24. God says this. This explains, he says, this explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife. And the two are united into one. This explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife. Interesting to me here, the word joined in this passage, he's joined to his wife. The word joined is the Hebrew word, you'll see it behind me, it's the Hebrew word dabak. And ultimately it means to cling or to cleave, to stick or to adhere or to stay close. Abe, if you throw that up on the screen so that everybody can see it here behind me. Dabak. It's a word that means to cling to or cleave, to stick or adhere, or to stay close. Interestingly enough, I found this, that the modern Hebrew word, because in the Old Testament here was an ancient Hebrew language. The modern Hebrew word for, get this, the modern Hebrew word for glue, it comes from this same word, dabak. Okay, so what this is ultimately referring to here is this, right? That being glued, in a sense, that being glued together so tightly, so closely that no space would come between you and no thing could pull you apart. That's what this is, concept of dabak is getting to. Glued together so tightly, such an attachment that nothing would come between you and that nothing could pull you apart. In the New Testament, Jesus even references verbatim this same Genesis passage of scripture, and then he adds to it saying this. He says, since they are no longer two, but one, let no one split apart what God has joined together. Let no one split apart what God has joined together. Let nothing come between them. Let nothing drive a wedge between them. Let nothing separate them. Let there be no daylight that is able to pass between them. See, in my estimation, this is this potential of separate. This is the greatest threat to our marriage as God intended it for us. It's not necessarily, you know, one thing in particular over any other thing, but it is anything. Not one thing specifically over this other thing. It's anything that creates a kind of space in between. And so we got to be on guard against anything that has the potential to come between us and our spouse. The most natural application, I want to look at a little bit of what this might mean in our everyday life and marriage. The most natural application with this, in all of this, in this is with families. The most natural application from this verse in Genesis, the most natural application with the family. God says, for this reason, a man will leave his mother and his father and be united or cleave to his wife. This is where we get the biblical, you know, marriage advice, the biblical marriage encouragement for young married couples that encourages them, maybe you've heard this, to leave and to cleave, okay? It says you leave your family of origin and you cleave or you cling to your spouse in order to start a new family. Okay, that the one thing that I wish that I could tell the parents, right, of every young couple who I have the privilege of officiating their wedding, right? And we spend time together, we talk about marriage, and we talk about all this stuff. The one thing I wish I could say to the parents of every young couple who I have a chance to officiate their wedding is this. I wish I could look at their parents, have a moment with them to say this and make this clear. I wish I could tell them, you are not gaining a son or daughter. Okay, I wish I could tell them your son or your daughter is leaving you and starting their own family and you are now becoming extended family. And I wish I could tell them the best thing that you can do for them, the best thing you can do for them is to love them and honor them and encourage them and support them and do everything that you can to give them the space that they need to establish their family and their own priorities and their own traditions and so on. Okay? Now, I'm not saying, don't misunderstand me in case you're like, oh, what? You know, I'm not saying married couples should not enjoy their families of origin. Absolutely they can and should. But it should always be a result of their invitation, not their parents' expectation. Okay? It should always be a result of an invitation, not an expectation, not an assumption, certainly not any kind of guilt or manipulation that obviously you'll spend every vacation or every weekend or every holiday or every free moment together. Families of origin are an incredible gift and an incredible blessing. Do not get me wrong, an incredible gift and blessing in any marriage. They're a blessing to kids. Our kids in marriage have other Jesus-loving, Jesus-following adults, investing in their lives. They're an amazing gift and an amazing blessing, but they cannot come first and they cannot come between a husband and a wife, because the tension will likely chip away little by little at the very thing that God has intended to join together. Okay, this, in my estimation, or even just in the tradition of marriage, conversation, this is the most common encouragement based on this verse that teaches, new married couples to leave and to cleave. But truthfully, there is a whole list. If we really to think about it, there's a whole list of so many other things that can pull apart the very thing that God intended to join together. And so I want to look at a handful of them, right? List at some of the other things that can pull apart the very thing that God intended to join together like this. And the first thing I'll say is this: kids are one of those things. Okay? Kids can have a massive impact on how strong the bond is, or how strong the glue is between a husband and a wife. Okay, now please do not misunderstand me in any way. Once again, kids are a massive blessing from God. I am ridiculously obsessed with my kids. Okay, but here's the caution. Okay, the kids cannot come first. Moms and dads, but maybe if I had a chance, I'd speak to moms for a second here and say this: you cannot put love and care and time and attention and kids' activities and kids' schedules before your husband, because guess what is going to happen someday? They're going to grow up. They might even get married. They might even start their own family. They're going to get a job and they're going to start to live their own life. And there's going to come a time when you don't have any more lunches to pack. You don't have any more homework to help with. You don't have any more schedules to coordinate or friends to pick up. You don't have any more games to watch or concerts to attend. And what happens to far too many couples is that they get to this point in their life and they sit across from each other at the dinner table and they look at one another and they don't recognize who the other is. They don't recognize who they're staring at, because they have spent the last 20 years glued to who? Each other? No, their kids. Husbands and wives, the best thing that you can do to be a good parent, because we want to be good parents, because our kids are an amazing, amazing gift and blessing. So yeah, we want to be good parents, but the best thing you can do to be a good parent is to be a good spouse that contributes to a good marriage under which you raise your kids, a good marriage under which your kids can thrive and grow every day, right? Your kids, massive gift from God, cannot come between you. Neither can your work. Guys, this is typically, this goes for all of us, but this is typically something that we need to hear the most. And so what I'd say to you is this: your career is important. The way that God designed you to lead in the world and in the marketplace and in the community is important, right? The way that you provide for your family, the way that you contribute to the well-being of your family, it should not be understated. It should not be overlooked. But your kids and your wife, they cannot take a back seat to your career. I love what Pastor Andy Stanley encourages of people in his book called, get this, Choosing to Cheat. It's a whole book that's about who wins and ultimately who loses when work and when family collide. And ultimately, he's saying, if you're going to cheat, the whole point of the book is this. He's saying, if you're going to cheat someone out of something, the whole point of the book is him saying this, cheat at work. Talking to everybody, but I think he's talking to guys, saying, if you're going to cheat anyone out of anything, cheat at work. He's not saying don't work hard. He's not saying don't worry about, you know, being a good employee or a good boss. He's not saying, hey, don't worry about working 40 hours a week. His point is this. You are replaceable at work. You are important, yes. I would acknowledge that. So would he in the book. You are important at work, but you are replaceable. If you stop performing, stop hitting quotas, you stop, you know, innovating, or if heaven forbid, if something happens to you, you're replaceable. Right? They could and would replace you. And here's the deal. Their life at that place, at that company, would go on. If something were to happen, right, you would be and you know, should be replaced at work, and their life would go on. But the whole point of the book is the only place where you are not replaceable is at home. You are the only one that can be your kid's dad. And most importantly, you are the only one who can be your wife's husband. No one else on the planet can fill that role but you. And so my encouragement to you is, do not let a job, a calling even, do not let an important place that God has called you to lead, to use your gifting, to use your wiring, do not let a career or a job separate what it is that God has intended to join together. The list of things that can threaten, that's the question I'm posing today. What's the greatest threat to this thing called marriage? The list of things that can threaten the prospect of a strong and a healthy marriage, the list goes on. It can include so many different things, from hobbies, you know, to addictions maybe, to secrets, even to friendships, if those things come between. And if those things create too much space between a husband and a wife who God intended to be one. This is, right, two becoming one. This passage of scripture that remind, in the Old Testament and the New Testament, that this idea that two unique, different, separate individuals, the idea that two can become, that two should become one, this is the great beauty, and this is the great mystery of marriage, right? That a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and two become one. Some translations say the two become one flesh. One flesh, right? The emotional and the spiritual and the physical and the sexual connection, the bond in marriage, dabak, right? Stick to, you're glued to, right? The bond spiritually, physically, emotionally that is created, it is so powerful that it takes two unique, separate individuals and it makes them into one. This was God's design. This was God's intention for marriage. And so if marriages today are truly going to live into this reality, if our marriages today are going to live into this, if they're going to be a picture of this reality that two become one, then there are a few things that I would suggest that implies. And so here's what I would suggest that it does imply, that you have to, you and your spouse, you have to have one God. You have to have one goal. Here's an odd one. I'll get to it in a second. You have to have one bank account. And here's the final one. You have to have one enemy. I want to talk about each of these, and I'll start with the first one there. I want to start with one God. The first of the Ten Commandments that God passes on to his people is this, in Exodus chapter 20. First of the Ten Commandments says this, you must not have any other God but me. Okay, this was commanded at a time when people everywhere they worshipped all types of little g gods. There was the sun god, the moon god, the harvest god, the fertility god, right? You name it, there was a god for it at this time. And so big G, God, the creator of heaven and earth, right? God is reminding his people that they are to have no other God but him. And so what I would say to husbands and wives today is that each of you should only have one God, and it should be the same God. And my recommendation is that it would be God the Father Almighty, the maker of heaven and earth. Right, there are studies that have been shown actually that that if couples agree on four major things, they have an exponentially higher probability of a successful marriage. And first on that list of four is religion and a shared household faith. For two to become one as God intended it, I'm telling you, you have to have one God, the God of the universe. You have to have, if we move on, you have to have one goal. If you were here last week, this is essentially what I was getting at. If you missed it, I'd encourage you go back and take a listen to it, right? But this is what I was trying to say last week. You heard me saying that the goal in life and in marriage, it's not happiness. So much of us think that's what life should kind of give back to us. Or so often we believe that that's what marriage should provide for us, right? That it's about making us happy. You heard me say last week that the goal in life and in marriage is not happiness, it's holiness. This is what the New Testament encourages of us about how we ought to love one another. It's not about happiness, it's about holiness. The goal for every single Jesus follower is to become more like Jesus, to resemble God in deeper ways. And so I'm telling you, I'm suggesting to you that your marriage will work best if you are both in agreement about this. You're both in agreement that you both have come to the understanding that marriage is not intended to make you happy, but it is intended to make you holy. You have to be in agreement and understand that your spouse is a gift to you to help you mature. Your spouse is a gift to you to help you grow out of sin and to grow into more of who it is that God has intended you to be. If two are going to become one, I think you have to have one goal, and it is becoming more of the person that God designed you to be. You also have to have, if we were to move on here, and I'll get kind of like, this is maybe like a hard right turn, I'll get brutally practical here. I'm suggesting to you that you have to have one bank account. The quickest way to erode like trust in one another, the quickest way to start chipping away and chiseling away at what God intended to join together is to keep your finances apart. I don't care who works and who doesn't or who makes more than the other. I'm telling you, if you want to win together, if you really want two to become one, and if you want to win together as one, you got to put your money together. If two really are going to become one, what I'm suggesting to you is that me has to die so that we can live. Mine has to die, right? That's the word we learn at the youngest of age. Mine, everything's mine, 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 mine. If two are going to become one, mine has to die so that ours can live. For the first, 10 years or so of our life, with young kids, my wife Erica, she did not work outside of the home. So I was the only one for this period of time. I was the only one bringing home a paycheck at the end of the day. And I made sure that Erica was crystal clear about one thing. That paycheck that I brought home at the end of the day, this is the one thing I made crystal clear. That was not my income. It was our income. The cars that we bought during that time of our life, those were not my cars. Those were our cars. She could drive whichever one she needed or whichever one she wanted whenever she wanted to, right? We made a plan with our money together. And as long as this was for me too, as long as it was, you know, within the plan, she didn't need my like special permission to go spend money. She didn't, you know, need my permission to go get a cup of coffee or to cut her hair or to, you know, go out for dinner with her friends. It's uniquely practical and kind of upfront in your face, I know. But I can't urge you enough. If two are going to become one, I'm telling you, I think you have to have one bank account. And the last thing that I'll say, which is certainly not least, but the last thing that I want to talk to you about, which is something that I've been talking to marriage couples, you know, people that come talk to me, I've been talking to about more and more and more. The last thing I'll say, which is certainly not least, is this. You both have to be in agreement. If two are going to become one, you have to be in agreement that you have one enemy and that most important, you understand, it's not each other. You have to be in agreement that you have one enemy and that it is not each other. Your enemy is, if we were to look at Scripture, your enemy is Satan. And his number one strategy in the world is to destroy what it is that God has joined and is joining together. See, this is what I think is interesting. Satan didn't even show up. If we go back to the very beginning of it all, Satan didn't even show up until God instituted this thing called marriage. Satan didn't show up while Adam was alone in the garden. It was only after God created Eve and joined the two together as one. See, Genesis 1 and 2 describe how God created man, and then God created woman in his image. And here's what he actually told them. God said to Adam and Eve, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and govern it." And so what we have to understand from this is that marriage and family and raising children was a primary piece of God's creation plan A for mankind. God's, you know, one of God's primary objectives, if not the primary objective, was that the world would be filled with those who know him and love him and are serving as representatives of him. They're serving as representatives of heaven on earth. That was God's intention. That was God's plan for mankind. The whole world, the whole earth would be filled. People love him and know him. And are serving as his representatives. And here's the deal. The family unit was the best vehicle for that to happen over the long haul, right? So God creates man and he creates woman and he gives them, you know, some translations say he gives them dominion, right, over the earth. He joined them together, we see in Genesis 1 and 2. He joined them together in this marriage covenant. And it's only then in Genesis chapter 3 that Satan shows up. I've heard it said like this: first comes the wedding, then comes the war. First comes the wedding, then comes the war. Gang, we got to understand that we are in a spiritual war. And the first step in winning it is recognizing it. If you notice, like so much of what is destructive in the world right now, it's aimed at marriages. It's aimed at, you know, like our kids too. We talk about our kids, man, it's advertising designed to get its hooks into our kids as young as possible. It's a whole kind of new worldview that is, you know, it's entering into TV shows and entering into schools to try to, you know, get our kids to be thinking about this world other, you know, in a way other than the way that God intended and the way that God designed for humanity, right? In our marriages, right? So much of the destructive things that exist in society today, they're aimed at our marriages. right? In our marriages, it's the selfishness and it's the greed and it's jealousy and it's pornography and it's all kinds of sexual brokenness that are all designed to what? To chip away at the thing that God intended to join together. And so husbands and wives, you have to agree. Been talking to so many couples that come into my office. This is the thing I want to say. I'm going, hey, look, you guys got to agree that you have one enemy and that it's not each other. And so here's the final thing that I would say to you today about marriage. Okay. The final thing that I would say to you is this: the most important fight to win in marriage, because I know we want to win the fight, right? Here's what I would say to you. The most important fight to win in marriage, it is not the one that you fight face to face. It is the one that you fight back to back. I know we all have an internal desire to win, right? We want to win the fight. So I'm telling you that the most important fight to win, it's not the one that you fight face to face. It's the one you fight back to back. It's the one you fight together. For the sake of what God is doing in you and what the sake of God is doing through you, in you and through you. So here's what I'd say. If you find yourself in a place, or a season of life where it's like, man, we're just kind of like, we're not clicking. If you find yourself in a place where you seem like you're butting heads or you're just kind of getting at it too much, here's what I would say. Do everything you can to recognize that it is just a sign and a signal to you to call a timeout. To recognize that you are playing right into the enemy's hands and to decide together these moments where you're going, man, we just seem to be going at it. These are moments for you to stop and decide together that the only fight that you're going to have in that moment and from that moment on, the only fight you're going to have is the one where you stand back to back. Fighting hard to protect what it is that God has joined together in you. This is something that Erica and I, we're just learning, 17, going on 18 years of marriage. This is something we're finally coming to realize. The moment that it seems like we're going back and forth too much are the moments where we just go, whoa, hold on, wait a second. We have an enemy. It's not you and it's not me, but God is doing great things in us and we're not going to let us get in the way of it. The moments we got to realize when we're going back and forth, we got to go, wait a second. We got to press pause. We got to call a timeout and we got to decide together to move together, back to back, arm in arm, shoulder to shoulder, to fight for the things that God is doing in us and doing through us. For two to become one, I'm just suggesting that you have one God, one goal, one aim. Right? One priority, one family, one heart, one mind, one direction, one bank account, and one enemy, which you gotta agree is not each other. I want to close here then, close today and close this series by just saying this. If your marriage is not exactly where you want it to be right now, here's what I want you to hear me say loud and clear. There is hope for you. God specializes, this is what you got to know. God specializes in bringing what is dead and what is dying back to life again. Long-term studies even show that 2/3 of unhappy marriages will become happy again within 5 years if couples stay together and choose to fight together, not face to face, but back to back. When couples choose to stay together and fight together for the sake of their marriage. That's a powerful piece of evidence, but more powerful than a statistic is the power of God that raised Jesus back to life again. And that is a power that is available to you and to me, and it is the same power that is capable of making two into one. And so I'm praying that God would be doing more of that for more of us here today. Let me pray. God, we're asking you to help us, those of us who are in this thing called marriage, those of us who might be someday. God, we're praying that you would help us to be on guard for whatever it is that might come between. God, could be a good thing, could be an evil thing. But at the end of the day, God, help us to see that it's not any one thing more than any other thing, but it simply is anything that could position itself between us, that could create a space between us, God. So we pray that you would not let that happen, that you would not let anything, God, separate us, that you would not let anything separate what it is that you intended to join together. Help us to choose as often as we can to be of one heart, to be of one mind. Help our marriages to be one team with one goal, with one vision. Help us to recognize that we have one enemy and that it is not the other. God, our marriages and our families, you know, they're a part of, they're a super vital part of your plan for faith, your desire, God, for faith to be passed on from generation to generation, to fill this world with people who know you and love you and represent you in their everyday life. So God, protect our marriages and protect our families and protect our kids from the powers of darkness in this world that would love to put a stop to the expansion of your kingdom here on earth. And we're praying this in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m. Midcurrent is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin.